Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Working up. Everybody's working.
With that time, yours.
There were a lot of ways that Sunday's game could have gone that wouldn't have necessarily surprised me. I thought the Chiefs, even with the issues they had with COVID the whole week, I thought they'd beat the Steelers, and I thought they'd probably have to beat them with at least missing one of their top two pass catchers, which obviously ended up being the case. I didn't think it was going to look like this, though, guys. This was one of the very narrow outcomes that I was genuinely just not expecting. This game was over at halftime, and it was over with Patrick Mahomes and Byron Pringle and a 50-yard bomb to Derek Gore. Some good work from the running game. Like, it was just a thumping over the Pittsburgh Steelers. As I tweeted after the game, that's hostages 36, volunteers 10, the Chiefs secure their sixth consecutive AFC West title, and they did it even with the absolutely toxic, cancerous Melvin Ingram. I can't believe he didn't single-handedly torpedo this franchise. I was told that's what would happen, because I've listened to Mike Tomlin's press conferences. I don't know why I'm feeling so snarky today, but I am. Welcome to Time's Ours. I'm Joshua Briscoe, Nate Taylor, Seth Kaiser. Nate, go ahead and walk me through exactly at what point you felt like from the press box this game was headed to ice.
By the way, just marvelous work.
Thank you.
Thank you. I mean, can we change the scoreboard at Arrowhead to hostages 36 volunteers did? Because if you do describe it like that, you're like, yeah, hostages would need to do more than the volunteers on the scoreboard. So, again, marvelous work. Look, this game was over at the end of the first quarter. This game, to me, fellas, reminds me that football is truly the ultimate team sport. And also, MVP quarterbacks, when healthy, can just about make anything look normal. And that beat down, and I think you alluded to this, Josh, even before we started recording, this beat down was just as similar, just as complete as when the Chiefs dismantled the Raiders, depending upon whether you want to say that happened in Las Vegas or more so in the rematch in Arrowhead. It was the same, just without the normal, without some of the normal characters, some of the normal star players that we are used to seeing. This was the ultimate team win, and yet you look at some of the plays and you're like, oh, this is why Aaron Rodgers is gonna win MVP, because like he can throw to anyone in a Green Bay Packers uniform, and we have just never had to see a version of that for the Chiefs offense, right? Mahomes and Kelce have just about always been available as consistently as you could ask from players of those caliber in terms of talent and obviously what they do from a production standpoint. But in the second game without Travis Kelce, and I included it in my story in The Athletic, it's like, oh yeah, they beat the Broncos in a meaningless game, but they beat the Broncos because they had the best player on the field. And it's like, oh, they beat the Steelers yesterday because they had the best player on the field.
And his name is Byron Pringle.
I mean, I think you mispronounced Creed Humphrey.
Oh, yep.
Seth, did this catch you by surprise?
That manner of it, just because we've kind of gotten used to this whole, like, hey, Chiefs kind of played down to competition a little bit. we're not used to the Chiefs just actively beating down teams. Although, it's worth noting this year, like, their wins, like, they had the heart attack win against Cleveland. They beat Philadelphia pretty handily. It didn't feel like it till the fourth because the defense was like, let's just let them march up and down the field. But they beat Washington by 18. Then they were close against the Giants and the Packers, but then they beat Vegas by a million, Dallas by 10, Denver by 13, Vegas by a million again. Golly, they just destroyed Vegas this year. Gosh, 41-14 and 48-9. That's so bad. And then you have the overtime win against the Chargers. And then like 36-10, like that game could have been so much worse. For one thing, there's a missed field goal and a missed extra point.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, and it could have been so much worse. Like, in the second half, the Chiefs had very strong, like, let's just get out of here healthy, guys. Come on. And Mike Tomlin's like, I'm calling timeouts. I am making this last as long as possible.
Holding us all hostage, funnily enough.
Exactly. He's just like, I didn't take people hostage, but now that I see that the Chiefs do it, and it works. But it's just worth noting that it's kind of interesting, like, on this win streak that they've been on. You know, they barely beat the Giants in a game where Mahomes did not play well. They barely beat the Packers, sort of. The defense dominated that game so much against a backup, albeit, that game didn't super feel in doubt in the fourth quarter to me. But since then, you've got multi-score wins in every single game except the Chargers. And I thought that's maybe what I would start with. But I would say, like, in terms of when you knew it was over, after the first drive by each team, it was one of those, like, it reminded me of the 2018 playoffs, right? That's when they played the Colts with that snow game. And I remember watching from the press box, hashtag I'm super important. And Nate, I remember you and me, like, there was some version, I don't remember whether we texted or whatever, but it was like, maybe even during warm-ups, it was like, you know, the Chiefs look a lot faster than these guys.
Yep. I believe that play was the end around to Tyreek Hill, and I said, oh, it's going to be that kind of day in the snow.
Yeah, yeah, it was just like, oh, they can't run with Sammy, they can't run with Tyreek, they can't run with McColl. Like, they just could not run with anyone. Like, they just couldn't do it. Or it wasn't McColl's, because he was the next year, because the whole deal. But it was one of those games where, like, you could see that Pittsburgh's offensive line was woefully overmatched. You could see that TJ Watt wasn't himself. And, I mean, he was out. He's a great player. But you could see, like, oh, they're not going to get pressure. And you could tell immediately Mahomes was like, I'm going to have one of those games where I'm just going to take these 10-yard gains all day. All day. Just blip, blip, blip. And so I knew after the first drive, barring, like, you know, one of those, hey, they're going to turn the ball over five times.
Right.
That it was over.
And even that just hasn't felt like it hasn't had that sense of impending doom that we had, that we learned to have, like the Pavlovian response of the ball is bounced up in the air and then we all just immediately tweet a bad word, because that's the season that we were watching, and then it sort of stopped being that way in this game. I mean, there, if we all were going to kind of throw out like a takeaway or something, the one just like fun stat that I want to give you, and look, again, nobody listening to this show thinks that a box score tells the full story, right? We've all gotten past that point. We're good here. This is more of a fun symptom of the game that we saw, and also just what these last two games have been for the Chiefs. Against the Chargers, the Chiefs scored 34 points with Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce combining for 22 receptions, 339 yards, and 3 touchdowns. One of the most ridiculous games I've ever seen from a pair of number one pass catchers. Against the Steelers, the Chiefs scored 36 points with 2 receptions for 19 yards, no touchdowns from that duo. Obviously, Hill did not play his usual amount. Travis Kelce didn't play at all. But the absolute whiplash of that is shocking. And in both games, the offense looked good. It was more late than against the Chargers and more the whole way through against the Steelers, I suppose. But at no point in either of those games, you know, do you think like, Well, this is an offense falling back to earth here, even as though, again, I know the Chiefs-Chargers game was not quite as beautiful right out of the gate, or at least in that sort of middle section where you occasionally see them stumble a bit. But the takeaway for me for Chiefs-Chargers was, oh, this offense can still do all of its usual things running through Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. I wonder if they'll be able to do that with anyone else. And then you get 50% of the 200% of Hill and Kelce yesterday, and the offense still looks wonderful against the Steelers defense that doesn't suck. Like, that offense is a misery to watch, even whenever they're helping your team win. But there are legitimate players all across that defense, and it didn't matter.
No.
Byron Pringle and Noah Gray and Blake Bell.
it's
crazy.
And I need to say this, to remind fans that there are going to be, in a championship season, or the potential of a championship season, you know, which is, I mean, look, this team is playing as well as anybody in the NFL right now. Obviously, they're the most consistent team since since November 1st, right? Since, I believe, that game right after Halloween. So, obviously, you know who the main characters are, but there's got to be guys along the way that play above expectation. And yet again, whether TJ Watt had cracked ribs, which it appeared to be, or not, Andrew Wiley is just playing out of his mind.
Yeah.
I can't state that enough. They don't say his name on the broadcast because he's holding up. Mahomes has 8 seconds because Andrew Wiley can win one-on-one. I didn't think Andrew Wiley was a tackle coming into training camp. I really was like, I don't know where his place is on the team. Maybe his best value is that he gives you the slightest bit of continuity with Nick Allegretti, even though the entire offensive line was obviously going to be changed from a starting position. And as a swing tackle, as the third option, he has just played marvelous compared to where he was a year ago when he was sort of thrust into that position, I believe, against the New Orleans Saints kind of late in the year when Eric Fisher was dealing with his issues. And obviously, Mitchell Schwartz had the back injury. Mike Remmers was still battling his own version of a lower back injury, if my memory's correct. And so I thought at the time, at this point last year, man, Andrew Wiley, admirable player, probably should be a guard. I don't know where his future is at a tackle. But it's clear he's worked really hard at this. He's gotten so much better about how to just take on some of these elite pass rushers. And it's been truly remarkable, just as much as it is on defense, to know that, okay, Andrew Wiley is blocking well. Noah Gray seems to have a much better understanding of zone coverage now and is actually an available option when necessary. Guys, Blake Bell caught a dig route across the field on the opening script.
He did. And was
open.
That was a moment right there also. So, yeah, forget after the first two drives. It was like, oh, no. Like, that's not good for you guys.
I don't know, and this is the unfortunate part of, again, not being in the locker room because you would talk to more guys, obviously, after games. Like, we don't necessarily know what this new variant does to one's body, even though the league has set its testing protocols where you can come back sooner. So, as you mentioned, Josh, Tyreek Hill played less than usual. But as Seth has mentioned, Tyreek Hill didn't really need to play after the first quarter. Like, they basically used him as a decoy after that. Charvarius Ward was one of the lesser guys who was on the COVID-19 list, came off of it, and was never fooled by a flea flicker that looked awful from the moment it started. So he performed well. He performed better than I anticipated just because, hey, I don't know what it's like if you test positive with this new variant. And even though you're vaccinated, like it, you never want a virus, let alone to try to play a football game shortly thereafter. So this was a resilient win. And this was also, as someone I think mentioned on Twitter earlier, this was half of a JV team being called up to varsity and the machine just never stopping. Like, it just, it was clockwork. It was systematic. It was organized. You know, it was the annual, hey, we get to talk to Clark Hunt for a few minutes because they won yet another AFC West divisional title. And he's like, look, man, you could put anything in front of Andy Reid and he would still be thorough in his preparation. And that speaks to him being a Hall of Fame coach. And at the same time, his players having full trust in him. And then on a day like yesterday, why would you not listen to him? Eric Bieniemy, Steve Spagnuolo, Dave Tobe. I mean, can we talk about Dave Tobe? I mean, how did they find Elliott Fry? I mean, I know how, but like, how? You gave him three practices, and he banged a 44-yard field goal in the win. I can't tell you how difficult that is, okay? With a new operating system of James Winchester. What's your name? It's Johnny, right? It's Johnny. Okay, Johnny's going to hold me the ball, and I'm going to kick this thing through a gusting wind, something that the veteran kicker on a always reliable Steelers team couldn't do. So, It's one of those victories where it just lets guys it affirms them in so many ways. And it's always nice when you have like reaffirming thoughts, messages, you know, outcomes. And this is just one part of, you know, if the team wins a championship, we could always track some of these moments. And I just think I'm kind of blown away. But again, it's a team sport, and like, they were the better team with half the JV squad or guys who weren't on the roster a week ago.
Yeah. I usually fail to mention this specifically till later in the show, so I'll say now, if you want to go read Nate's Gamer on this one, you can go check it out up on The Athletic right now, from all the takeaways from a, I think, appropriately referred to their resilient win. And also, Seth, you have your first piece of the week up in the Chief of the North newsletter, mnchiefsfan.substack.com. And your final takeaway in this piece made me very happy because it's something that I was talking about on the radio 12 hours before, not quite 12, but it felt kind of like it, like 8 hours before reading this piece here. It always makes me happy when we have similar conclusions on things, because it means either we're both really smart or we're both equally dumb. And, you know, at that point, it doesn't really matter which it is. But you sort of dismount here with the observation that the Chiefs can win and have won just about any style and every style of game that you could think of this year. In at the very least, they've won every style of game that's been thrown at them. Can you expand on that a little bit, and also why that was one of your final takeaways, and why that's important here with two regular season games left and then playoff time?
Sure. Beyond going into just, you know, how wins have occurred, the biggest thing would be to note, like, say, even just in the first half against the Steelers and then going into the second half a little bit, you got to watch them do any number of things really, really well, which is going to happen in a blowout win, right? You know, you commented about it. You have to be better in like every phase of the game all over the field to dominate like that. And they were. And what's interesting is that they can win at every level on both offense and defense. So, I mean, if you start off with the defense, because that's kind of been the big storyline this year, is went from historically bad to it's been really, really good. Like, not just like good or above average, like what the hope has always been, but like a higher ceiling than I thought they could reach, because I assumed that the version we saw of Frank Clark earlier this year was what it was always going to be, right? I didn't think he'd go back to being a really, really good player, like, because players usually don't do that. That's just not something you see. But they can win at every level on defense. They can win rushing four guys, right? Their defensive line. They had a rough game against the Chargers to an extent, but, you know, they were missing their best player in Chris Jones, right? And they were also missing Willie Gay Jr., one of their most important defenders. And we talked about the difference in those two things, right? And you saw Willie Gay Jr.'s impact against the Steelers in the run game. People talk about him, you know, as an athlete and a pass defender, but he's really important in the run game as well. So they can win with the front four, whether it's against the pass or the run. In some cases, they and then at the second level, the linebacker group where they've been poor for years, or at least middling and capable of being exploited. That, with how Gay's been playing and how Bolton's been playing and where that allows and how that allows Hitchens to play, it's become more of a position of strength. And then on the back end, you have a number of guys who are playing well in coverage, who are super physical. You saw that come into play again, how physical their cornerbacks are. All their corners tackle well. And that's one of those things that people love to talk about to the point almost becomes overrated. But it does matter. Like, it's like having a corner who's bad at tackling isn't that big a deal because corners are supposed to be bad at tackling. Having corners that are really good at tackling, though, that can be an unexpected strength because a lot of run games are designed to try to force your corners to tackle. A lot of wide receiver screens, that kind of stuff, they're designed to force the corners to tackle. And if they can, it's a big deal. So they can win at every level of the defense. They can beat teams that are run heavy. They can beat teams that try to throw the ball all over the yard. They force really tough throws. Even Roethlisberger made half a dozen to 10 really good throws Sunday. And it felt like every single time they had a completion, it had to be a really good throw. You know, like that first completion he had on that first down, that was an insanely good pass. And that's what they needed. And their defense, it just forces teams to play so well, snap after snap after snap, to move the ball. And they don't give up big plays. And then on the offensive side of the ball, gradually what you've seen over the course of the season is them playing small ball and them saying, okay, fine, we'll run these quick hitch concepts to death since you're going to give it to us 8 yards at a time. We'll run the ball. They can do whatever they want to do. Andy still doesn't take advantage, in my opinion, enough schematically of what teams do against them. But what you saw against is they can run the ball down your throat. They can run a bunch of little dinky routes. They can run pick plays and screen you to death. And if none of that works, they can always go bombs away down the field the moment you stop paying attention. They can do everything. And like that line, styles make fights. You know, it's a boxing term, and it's something people use for football all the time. And it's true. That's why the whole, well, team A beat team B and team C beat team A, that doesn't make sense because styles make fights. With the Chiefs, that's not necessarily true because they can adapt if they're willing and they don't shoot themselves in the foot. They can adapt to basically any style of game. And that's why I'm just, with how they're currently playing, they are not matchup proof because matchup matters, but they can do whatever they need to do and kind of adapt on a game-by-game basis if that's what they want to do. Andy Reid traditionally hasn't been that kind of coach, but they can do that now. And I feel like they're doing it a little more lately.
Yeah. And let's go through some of these most recent victories, right? I mean, they just played straight up and beat a team that always used to do that in the Steelers.
Mm-hmm.
Against the Cowboys, they were like, we're not afraid of you, Dak Prescott. We're coming. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. It's like, no.
And it worked
against the Raiders in the first game. They had just come off of telling a rookie quarterback, hey, Doc, it's a zero blitz. Like, hey, Doc, we coming. They went from a game like that and then said, okay, now it's our time. Now it's a game for our offense to show just how much of a mismatch this is against, you know, a Gus Bradley defense with the Raiders. In the rematch, they didn't blitz Derek Carr a ton, but the defense was more willing to create turnovers in that game, which led to short drives for the offense, and the offense did its best to complement the defense in that way. Against the Chargers, hey, man, we need greatness. We need, you know, in order to win the division against a team that's playing really, really well, we need the best quarterback in the league to be the best quarterback in the league. And so they have, you know, I'm not saying this is a bingo card, but if there is something that they need, they can draw from it. And that's obviously what's going to be so important in January, whether they get the number one seed, which we can get into that a little bit later, or, you know, just however they, whoever is in front of them in the playoffs, this roster and this coaching staff and the experience they've already had leads me to probably one of the most terrifying things I want to say, fellas. There's a quote that Patrick said yesterday. I'm going to give Josh, you may have listened to this via the postgame show. Do you know what quote I'm suggesting?
I'm on the edge of my seat, but I don't. I heard every syllable that man said yesterday, and including a profane one that made it to television very hilariously. But I don't know. I don't know.
This was the problem. And our colleague and my buddy Robert Mays said this like weeks ago about the AFC, you know what, like screwing themselves up. And it really, and by the way, quietly, it wasn't the AFC. It was actually the NFC East that disrupted the AFC's plan, right? Washington had a chance to beat the Chiefs. They got torched in the second half. Without Saquon Barkley, the Giants couldn't do it, okay? It's not the Chiefs' fault that Aaron Rodgers was immunized, but here we are, and they lost. You know, like the Cowboys, the best representative of the NFC East, got beat. And in that middle part of the season, the AFC had kind of done its job. Like Baltimore did its job. The Chargers had won. Obviously, the Bills, you know, that was their best win of the season up until yesterday. But Robert's point, which is correct, was like, man, the AFC really wasted a chance. Because not only were contenders beating the Chiefs, but they had multiple weeks to build and maybe increase their lead or maintain it in the standings. Obviously, they've slipped back. Obviously, the NFC was a godsend to the Chiefs in some ways.
Shout out to the NFC East. Yeah, absolutely. Really appreciate you guys. You kept it interesting.
Yeah, and by the way, I always think of that Eagles game as like, wow, that was when the Eagles season kind of turned. Because like, Jalen Hurts is kind of a thing. Yeah. And I like it. And like Sirianni, like, okay, like, all right, I like this, sir. Like, coach into your player's strengths. How about that? Not about the system anymore, are you, coach? Or not as much, I should say. Quote, this is from Patrick Mahomes yesterday. Quote, defenses are playing us with more high shell coverages, and they are making us drive the full length of the field. It's built us for these moments. Guys. Guys, we need to start telling every AFC defensive coordinator to start getting in the lab. Because it's too late. Okay? It's too late. He is a living organism that has figured out the too high shell coverage.
Incredible schematic advantage of his players not dropping the football anymore.
Right. Or turning the ball, or dropping passes that lead to interceptions.
Right.
or fumbling. But like, guys, we can't blitz. All right, scratch that off the chalkboard. Okay. He seems to know where to go with the ball with too high coverage. All right, scratch that off the list. Can we put 11 Pro Bowlers on the field? That's against the cap. Okay, scratch that off. What can we do?
We need more Bosas.
There's only two of them, coach.
Oh, dang it. So there's 90 gajillion inches of snow outside, and I want to touch on all this, but I have to go start my car, so I'll be right back.
Oh, God.
What up? Wow.
It is, Nate, would you say, in the low 60s here currently in Kansas City?
It's been nice today.
I think it's supposed to get cold tomorrow, but it feels really nice.
I'm going
to open my window in the office here. I think we might be moving back in the timeline a little bit because you're asking, all right, so what do you do now? And I was going to mention this anyway in the whole Styles fights situation in the conversation. You know what you might just have to do? Throw the football for 525 yards.
Oh, giddy up!
I know it's Monday. I know we're going to talk about this game later in the week.
What did the Ravens do to this man? What did they do to him?
I would not hate it if we got a 1,000-yard passing game for Patrick Mahomes plus Joe Burrow next week. I would like to see that.
No, I am. When the schedule comes out, you're like, all right, that might be something. All right, you know, ooh, I want to circle this one. I want to circle Baltimore. I want to circle, you know, December 16th in L.A. because you just know the magnitude of where that's going to go even before the first kickoff happens. All right, it'll be really nice to see Aaron. Yep, it didn't happen again. You know, so, yeah, hey, the Cowboys come to town. That'll be fun. What I'm getting at, folks, is Cincinnati was not one of those circle on the calendar games. It was like, oh, they're contractually obligated to play this game in front of a live audience and in front of millions on television. You know, but give credit to Joe Burrow. Man, I really cannot wait to talk about that game later this week.
They got four legit dudes.
Can I note something?
Sure.
You know
you gotta say it like this. We're saying dudes.
Dude, do you know where Cincinnati's weighted DVOA was on offense before facing the Ravens C squad?
Can I just have this? Can I just enjoy this one? Go ahead. Ruin my
dude,
fun.
Dude, no. It was no, I like Joe Burrow, and they do have they got four dudes. You guys are not wrong. They Mixon, Burrow, Higgins, and Young.
Tyler Boyd. Tyler Boyd will just occasionally have a 70-yard touchdown. It just happens sometimes.
He will occasionally have a day, for sure.
I just like them. I don't think they're going to win next week. Spoiler alert. I just like them.
No, for sure. And they have torched some defenses this year.
Yeah, like the Ravens and the Ravens again.
Yeah. And now they didn't do much against San Francisco. They did okay. They put up 23. Denver gave them problems, and Los Angeles gave them problems. Because we're talking, but they're 20th. There's the spoiler in offensive DVOA. Now, that's weighted DVOA. Actually, it would be a little bit worse, I think, if it were earlier in the year. But that's obviously going to go up facing the Ravens. So that's just something I want to kind of put a pin in. But I'm happy that there's a lot of hype right now around the Bengals because and we'll talk about it later this week, but have you noticed, like, so the Chiefs, they going into the game against the Chargers. You heard a lot of hype about the Chargers.
By the way, shout out to Kimberly Martin from ESPN was like, come back to me when Justin Herbert has an MVP and a Super Bowl MVP. And everybody on GetUp was like, yeah, that's fair. But go ahead, Seth.
You guys want a real quick piece of breaking news going to ruin your day, and then we can take Seth's point.
Oh, Bashaud.
Bashaud Breeland signing with the Cardinals. And I've always kind of rooted for the Cardinals. I got family in Arizona and everything. I'm going to go ahead and get my jersey now before it's too late so I can enjoy these last two games of the regular season with Bashaud Breeland as a Cardinal. I'm not saying the Chiefs needed him. I just wanted them to do it. My day's ruined.
I wonder how much he would have played, and I wonder whether that factored into a decision. Because they really, like we talked about last week, I mean, they're doing pretty well where they're at right now. Yeah. But no, that is a bummer. I like Bashaud Breeland, and I think he will forever, maybe, be an underrated part of the run the Chiefs have had the last few years.
Definitely.
But it's just, so you see that the Chargers got a lot of hype, and then the Chiefs beat them, and then Herbert deserves all the hype. They're a really good team. I personally, there's a long list of teams I'd rather see in the playoffs than the Chargers. Although to be fair, I'm curious what Herbert does when it's like, you know, they have Chris Jones, they have L'Jarius Sneed, they have Olivier Jr. I don't know. And then they beat Pittsburgh a week after Pittsburgh beats the Titans, and no one's out here pretending Pittsburgh's a juggernaut, right? Like, mm-hmm. We're not doing that. Mm-hmm. But they're a playoff team. Well, maybe. They were supposed to be.
They had a chance to be a playoff team.
Yeah,
they're
still
technically in it.
They're an average NFL team.
Perfectly, actually. They're going to end this season 8-8-1. I'm just sure of it.
Yeah, just perfectly average. And beating down a perfectly average NFL team is not easy. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering if now the Bengals have a lot of hype, which is good. They deserved it. Great win against the Ravens C squad on defense, mm-hmm. and not their actual quarterback. That's great. Man, I've become snarkier and snarkier leading into these games. One of these days it's going to come back and bite me. But it might be interesting to see the Chiefs start to get... I feel like the Chiefs are still falling victim a little bit to how badly they started the year.
Yeah.
And people are still more kind of basing it off that as opposed to what's happened over the course of the last eight games.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. And also, being coming off of back-to-back Super Bowl appearances, like, whenever the Chiefs win, it is business as usual. And whenever it looks ugly, it's what's wrong with the Chiefs. I mean, you know, this is still relatively new territory for Chiefs fans, I know, because this is still relatively new territory for the Chiefs. But it's kind of, I think it's part of this super weird territory. Speaking of weird territory, Seth, I know you have to go hike through the snowy mountains of Minnesota. Did you have anything else from our previous topic when you had to go put on your snowshoes, go outside and start your car so you won't absolutely freeze into a brick of ice whenever you get out there?
I mean, Coach Kizer, I mean, we've been crunching the numbers, watching the film. Even the analytics department doesn't have an answer right now. What do we do?
To stop the Chiefs?
Stop the snow. Stop 15.
Well, if you get really good pressure with four and you have really, really great coverage and Chiefs receivers drop some passes, you got a good shot.
Is you guys remember Flubber, the movie?
Yes.
I think of course I've mentioned this on the show before. You need you got to put, inverse Flubber on the gloves of Chiefs receivers. Or maybe just Flubber. I guess it would bounce off. Oh, my God. Do you guys think they had Flubber on their gloves for the first, eight games of the year? It's why Tyreek Hill's hands got so bouncy.
I won't rule that out. Well, that was the other thing. It's not like it was just they need the third weapon to step up and all that. Kelce and Hill were dropping a lot of passes, too. Yeah. And that was never going to continue. Mm-hmm. Travis Kelce was bound for the type of game that he had against the Chargers. But no, honestly, on film, the Chiefs' offensive line is playing as well as it's played all year. Orlando Brown has more and more. I think he's played well all year, but I think he's played better as the year's gone along. Mm-hmm. They're tough, man. They're a tough out. And they just, I think you really, it's the same thing it's been all year. You hope that they beat themselves. You hope that they commit a few stupid penalties. You hope that they drop a couple passes. You hope that Mahomes gets a little frisky in the pocket. You just hope that...
Maybe.
You either need 35 or you need luck. And honestly, playoff Mahomes...
He retired, actually, so that's not going to work.
Playoff Mahomes has also been an entirely different animal. The only two times we've seen Mahomes lose in the playoffs was against the Patriots, where they put up 35 in the second half. We're Tom Brady and Bill Belichick.
It was 31.
And they were like, what do we have to do to put this guy away? And what they had to do was watch a team play, too high man coverage over and over and over and over and over and lose a coin flip. That's what they had to do. And then the Super Bowl, even with everything that happened, if people just caught passes, that's a close game. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know what you can expect. I mean, especially with the Chiefs' run game finding a groove when they need it, which is something just on a side note, I'll let you guys talk about it because I do have to go. I am interested in looking at some of the snaps this week because Super Bowl teams often have guys come out and provide unexpected contributions. Not often, always. And Derek Gore's a guy who, for a few different reasons, I really like what he brings to the offense. And I like the fact that when he runs the ball, Andy Reid's like, well, we should run power. And I like that. It's like, hey, we should do the thing the offensive line is good at. That sounds awesome. And I'm going to try to take a look at him this week and take a look at what it is he's doing on some of these snaps, whether it is just the blocking's that much better on those snaps, or whether he's doing something a little bit different. So that should be fun. And then we'll talk about that and only that, and not the draft, and not
positional value.
Yeah, that is if I do not get lost in a mountain of snow. Guys, it snowed 15 inches here.
What?
And now it's
what?
It's 5 degrees out. This morning I had an existential crisis, but. I will hopefully if I'm not eaten by a Yeti or
It was 65 degrees here today.
Okay. Well,
just move, Seth. I mean, it's going to get cold on Wednesday, but just come down here. It's fine.
I'm going to think about it.
You guys, your entire family can stay on our futon.
Oh,
well, it's going to be a real nice. It's going to be a real Willy Wonka, a little Charlie the Chocolate Factory situation.
That sounds like a treat. But I'll catch up with you guys later this week.
All right. Stay.
Thank you, sir. Like,
keep your body temperature up, Seth.
Yeah, I'll run in place while I drive.
I think that sounds dangerous. To get the rest of Seth's work this week, go to the Chief of the North newsletter, mnchiefsfan.substack.com. Plus, we'll of course, have another episode later in the week looking ahead to Chiefs and Bengals.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
You want to spend a minute on the running back thing here, Nate? I mean, I've got... Also, we should say that the good news on the injury front is that it sounds like Clyde Edwards-Helaire, not a broken collarbone. We found that out shortly after the game. Negative x-rays there. And then today we find out that I think it was Schefter who used the phrase week to week, but said it would still be unlikely or still be difficult to see him returning in time for the Bengals game, but that it's a bruised, I'm trying to get the right phrase here, bruised shoulder, week to week designation here. Again, quote, challenging from the play Sunday against the Bengals. So that's your injury update. And then to Seth's point, I haven't done the math on this. I'd like to go double check it at some point. I don't know who would have been the contender for this other than maybe Jamaal Charles. Maybe Damian Williams might have made this happen. But Derek Gore has a 50-yard run and a 50-yard reception this year, and I can't imagine that happens terribly often, and he's done it on not very many touches. Obviously, Darrel Williams has gotten a lot of work as well. So any thoughts on that group there? I know Andy Reid also talked about Jerick McKinnon some today. He's eligible to return from the IR. So some options again in the running back room.
Yeah, this is my understanding right now on Monday. Could change, of course, depending on how practice goes this week. But my understanding is for the betterment of the postseason, I wouldn't anticipate Clyde Edwards-Helaire playing on Sunday against the Cincinnati Bengals. So that means Darrel Williams will start. Derek Gore will be the backup. Jerick McKinnon can be your third down, scat back, passing option if he is activated from injured reserve and he practices well this week. Andy, as you mentioned, sort of gave the appearance that like that's what he thinks the week is going to go to. Like, hey, you know, I think his quote was that McKinnon is in a pretty good position physically, end quote. So, so if he does well, they'll at least have three running backs that all know the system by now, that are all capable. But to Seth's point, Josh, and every now and then, you know, someone says something, and whether it's recorded or not, you can kind of, you know, crackle the knuckles and flex your football expertise, or the fact that you watched NFL films as a kid to pass the time back in the day. Because, see, kids, there wasn't a thing called YouTube.
Yeah.
All right, you had to pop in a VHS and say, well, I mean, it's football, so that's better than Days of Our Lives. So let's roll the tape.
If my mom is listening to this episode, man, you just got on the naughty list. That's gonna be a hard one for you to come back from.
I'm sorry, Miss Briscoe. But
that's really brutal.
When Seth said Derek Gore could be somebody who could, you know, matter in a important part of the season. You know who the first player I thought of?
No, I don't. I feel this. Yeah, go ahead.
All right, Look, I don't know the future, guys. I'm just trying to give you context. Derek Gore, who again has played very well, coming out of Louisiana Monroe. You know, he was with the Chargers in 2019, he was with Washington. He was then with the Chargers last year, but he never got on the field. The Chiefs have given him his first real opportunity. Look, guys, he's averaging 4.6 yards a carry. All right? I get it. All right? He's listed at 5'9", 200 pounds. The player I'm thinking about at the time was listed at 5'11", 216 pounds. But the first player I thought of was Timmy Smith. Oh, Timmy Smith. Now you're wondering, if you're of a certain age, who the hell is Timmy Smith, okay?
I gotta be honest, I just Googled the man. Go ahead, you take it from here. I'm not gonna help.
I mean, his Pro Football Reference page is kind of sad, but also it is a shooting star across the galaxy. 3 years, 87, 88, 89, or excuse me, 1990. He was with Washington. Then he spent a year in Dallas, but it didn't work out. But anyway, he reached his apex as a running back, which also tells you how brief these careers are, sadly. No kidding. With Washington. And let me tell you something. Some people will, and look, I'm capable of doing both. It's totally fine. But some people will remember the Super Bowl in 1988. By the way, kids, I used to play the Super Bowl in late January. This game was played on January 31st. In Jack Murphy Stadium. God, what a time. In 1988, Timmy Smith, on a field that included John Elway in the Super Bowl, ran for 204 yards on 22 attempts.
Unbelievable.
He had a long of 58, and he scored 2 touchdowns. Okay? Now, historically, for significance, the quarterback of that team was Doug Williams. And Doug Williams gets most of the shine for obvious reasons, because he outgunned John Elway in a Super Bowl, when honestly, that Denver Broncos team kind of stunk. Again, fans of a certain age are nodding their heads with me, hopefully. But look, guys, after the first quarter, Denver was up 10-0. It looked like John Elway was going to do it. And then Timmy Smith happened. So I don't know if Derek Gore will reach the heights of this. But similar running style, similar background, obviously comparable. And look, if Derek Gore does something beyond in the year of 2022 early, I just want you to remember that I told you guys these type of things can happen, because in my brain, the moment Seth said this, I was like, Timmy Smith, man. He's hoping for a Timmy Smith moment. And that's no disrespect to Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Darrell Williams. Darrell Williams kind of had his lovely playoff moment in the win over Cleveland in the divisional round last year before Clyde came back in the AFC Championship game. But look, guys, can Derek Gore be Timmy Smith? I mean, let's see it, coach. It's hard. I mean, Patrick Mahomes is on the field, so is Travis Kelce, so is Tyreek Hill in a perfect world. But yeah, I think Derek Gore has earned more opportunities if they are available. And you don't want to take the ball out of Patrick Mahomes' hands right now, because golly, he is cooking. But I do get the sense that, like, Derek Gore has good vision. He showed yesterday that he can catch the ball. He can even improvise with Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes is saying, hey, man, go deep.
Here's my question for you on that right there. So that was a 50-yard completion when it was all said and done. Derek Gore is the third running back on this team right now. He started the season as the fourth running back on this team. Maybe,
yes.
I mean, maybe fifth behind Darwin Thompson before he got cut. Like, Derek Gore is not, I don't imagine, getting a ton of first-team reps in practice. I don't imagine that Derek Gore is getting a ton of run with Patrick Mahomes at practice. And whenever he is, I can't imagine that he's getting a lot of receptions in practice. You tell me, do you think that the first pass that Derek Gore ever caught from Patrick Mahomes that went for 50 was in a real game against the Pittsburgh Steelers?
It's not the first, but it certainly isn't like this is a regular occurrence.
Be running that all that often, right?
Yeah, to your point, the way it's worked. But I mean, you know, again, give credit to, and by the way, I believe Greg Lewis was not coaching yesterday because he was part of the COVID protocols. So, can we put that on, like, can we put that as a bullet on Eric Bieniemy's resume? Because, you know, coaches, you know, teams can start interviewing coaches starting today.
Did you see the tweet with, like, the list of the guys today?
Of course I did.
Top six or whatever?
Of course. I mean,
spoiler alert for any of you who didn't. Eric Bieniemy's name, not even on the list anymore. We're just ready to rehire Dan Quinn.
Hey, we don't have Mike Kafka, unfortunately. We don't have Greg Lewis, unfortunately. But hey, they scored the Hosses just scored 36 without a Hall of Fame tight end and with very little needed from a wide receiver who will likely go in the Hall of Fame as well. So it just speaks to, again, the brilliance of Mahomes and the fact that, like, Derek Gore's a gamer. And I think people can admire that. And, I would not be opposed to a real 50-50 balance on the box score in terms of touches between him and Darrell Williams. Just, and also because, like, I mean, it is late in the season. Like, you also want to preserve Darrell Williams as best you can because you know he can do it in the playoffs. He's already shown you that a year ago. And yeah, let's see Derek Gore get some touches against the Cincinnati Bengals. Like, why not? Considering that there was one drive where, obviously I've rewatched the game. I wanted Jim Nance to be like, come on, dog, just say mixtape. Don't say highlight film. Say the mixtape, okay? But on the one drive where he I think it was 66 of like the 74 yards were accounted for by Derek Gore. I mean, give him credit. But Tony, tell Jim it's a mixtape, dog. Tell him it's like, you know, and one style. And yes,
what if Jim Nance would have gone, and on the and one highlight reel,
they call him the professor. What?
And one more yard on the carry. Oh,
is he, again, random question for friends of a certain age. Is Derek Gore more of the professor or is he hot sauce?
I think Derek Gore, sneaky old, and I think you have to be sneaky old to be the professor. By sneaky old, I mean I think he and I are the same age, which is where I'm at right now. I believe he has a December birthday and also just turned 27. I looked this up. That is correct. He turned 27 on December 13th. So old Derek Gore, as I've referred to him, is exactly 10 days older than me. I am decrepit. But, look, I mean, Can I get off like a quick running back thing here in
sure.
in a way that I don't listen. I'm just gonna make it quick, easy, and we're all gonna be chill here, okay? Everybody, take a deep breath. This is all fine. Glad Clyde Edwards-Helaire's injury is not more serious.
Correct.
That is yes. good for the offense.
Yes.
The worst thing I think you can have for a running back room is to find out that you can't trust your second or third guy, and to have Clyde and Daryl and Derek Gore is. You can have Damian Williams and Daryl Williams, and you find your third guy. And in some cases, it's been Michael Burton in short yardage. Like, the Chiefs' backfield is in a good place. If we were going to talk about draft picks and all of those things that Seth isn't going to talk about in his piece, I'd tell you that you can have the same backfield that you saw and T. Higgins and Michael Pittman, you know, who went right after, not cherry picking, just the next two picks, and we're both receivers, all of that. Don't want to dwell on that, really. But we're at a point here where, like, and Seth mentioned this a little bit before we got rolling. Look, Clyde Edwards-Helaire is the most like dynamic athlete and most talented and also youngest guy out of that group by a nice little margin. And the larger point that I think often gets lost in people taking it all very personally, other people, never me, I would never take this personally, is that the difference between Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Daryl Williams and Derek Gore is a lot more narrow than you would think. And two of those dudes are undrafted free agents who are playing some really good football. I really enjoy that part of football also, honestly. I've always loved running backs. The only thing that's ever tainted that has been how toxic the discourse has become. And I don't want to even dip back into that today. But I think we're just seeing a running back room that is absolutely at its best when Clyde Edwards-Helaire is also a part of it. Had a caller on the postgame show last night who was like, hey, so, you know, what? Why does this offense sometimes look better with Daryl Williams being the guy there? There's a lot more factors than just that. You can speak to this, and I know Seth wanted to kind of tiptoe around this a little bit at least, but, like, the fact that Daryl Williams seems to be clearly the third down back is, one, still surprising from what I would have expected when they drafted Clyde, but also, like, puts him in some different situations, game management-wise. Also, the Chiefs do not seem to treat all three of their backs the same in terms of what they ask them to do. There are a lot of factors there that, again, it just, not to belabor this point, but, like, a lot of factors impact what running backs can do and what they look like. Williams and Gore looking great is really fun. I love an undrafted running back who makes his way onto a potentially championship-winning team or caliber team at least. I think that's a blast. And they'll be, also, to be clear, I think they'll be fine if Clyde misses the game against the Bengals. As you said, sounds like he probably will. If he misses the rest of the regular season, they'll be fine with Williams and Gore and maybe McKinnon and maybe Elijah McGuire. I think if he got 10 carries, he'd probably make some Chiefs fans very happy. Because running backs in this league are all really good, including guys you might not have heard of, at least before training camp, and Derek Gore. I think it's fun, and also ends up in some often unproductive conversations that I don't want to ruin the show with today. But do you have any thoughts on that idea of the offense looking different with these running backs in and what plays into that? Because, again, I think we've got to go beyond Daryl Williams good, Clyde bad, because that sucks. That's
no.
bad analysis, and it's not very fun.
Yeah, in terms of shiftiness, using a guy who can run routes in space, I mean, it's clearly Clyde. But, you know, as Tony Romo sort of showed on the telecast, as we said before, defenses have built for them to be this way, and it just helps that, okay, who's the best guy to run a swing route to where I can release the ball in less than 2.5 seconds is Daryl Williams, okay? And it's great that they've developed that tool for them to use or for them to go to when necessary against cover 4, cover 2. Like, you know, obviously when they want to prevent a big play, Daryl Williams is more than capable. I think Daryl Williams' vision has gotten better this season. He was making much better cuts yesterday than he was maybe early in the year. And I think Derek Gore just wants to run straight ahead. And yeah. Sometimes that mentality can serve you well. I'm not going to mention the player, but you know who they are. Or you know who he is. But I'm assuming Eric Bieniemy doesn't have to tell that guy to run forward. To get upfield. Okay? Some players, you got to say, hey man, get upfield.
He was on such a good run, too, and then he did it again yesterday.
You ain't got to tell Derek Gore to get upfield, okay? No. Right. It's a case where whether they need, and I mean, this is fun too for Derek Gore because, you know, when he's getting most of his touches, it's not like the defense doesn't know they're running the football. Hey, fellas.
True. Yeah. Good point.
40's in the backfield and I'm handing off. Yeah. All right.
And the offensive line is just winning and he's just going upfield and they're just moving the football.
And this accentuates Trey Smith, Creed Humphrey, I think Joe Tooney is doing a very good job. I'd also, by the way, at some point I'll try to get an update on this. Like, some guys, they have fractured, they have a fracture in their hand, and then it heals over the course of the season. I wonder if Joe Tooney's at that place right now, because I'm seeing less and less padding on that hand, so that might be something that I get to ask Andy Reid later this week.
But, do you know how I would not heal a broken bone in my hand? By playing football for 2 months.
By trying to block 300-pound linemen?
Defensive linemen? That would not be my personal strategy. That feels counterintuitive.
Well, he is the highest paid left guard in NFL history. So!
And he's apparently from outer space.
Yes, and he is a consistent, he is a machine of consistency. It is funny to me that they got, you know, they unfortunately had to release Mitchell Schwartz, who was the most consistent, I play every snap, you know, robot at right tackle, to now just here's a left guard off the assembly line who is automated blocking for you. Just slide him in.
Automated blocking. Yeah.
Just he's automated blocking. Someone has already lost their jobs and here they are. Just even if a certain hand doesn't work, he's still blocking.
We got to get Joe Tooney a hobby that he can have publicly. Like how Mitchell Schwartz became famous for his cooking. We got to get Tooney something.
It's called protection.
Well, something more, something non-football related that people can relate to. Can learn a little from.
I won't
hold my breath.
It's just funny to think about. But no, I mean, like all those guys, I mean, we all knew that Orlando Brown was really good at run blocking. Mm-hmm. I mean, we all knew that. Mm-hmm. And again, Andrew Wiley playing better than even you think right now. Like, rewatch all the games. He's playing better than you think he's playing right now. Which, by the way, we haven't really talked to Andrew Wiley much. Be nice if we got to talk to him too. But that's a you know, it's just a trivial thing that.
Sorry, were you not excited to talk to Anthony Hitchens yesterday? Because
no, I mean Anthony Hitchens is a wonderful human being.
Yeah, sure.
But you would like, you know,
just feel like we heard from him recently.
Look, as a thing, you know, the things I've told you, Josh, is this team always slants more offense than defense just because you have a Hall of Fame head coach who's known for his offensive innovations. And Brett Veach is no idiot. He understands that he has the greatest asset in the franchise's history at the quarterback position. Now, does the entire organization flow in that category? Of course it does. Is it necessary at all the times? No. But, you know, it was lovely to talk to Byron Pringle, and I wrote about him, which will be out by the time people hear this podcast. Because he had a very important performance given the circumstances around the team and who was available to catch a football this week. You know, but Chris Jones came back from COVID and played well. I mean, Travarius Ward came back from COVID and played well. I mean, this is no criticism. These are just facts. I mean, Tyrann Mathieu is actually the voice, the leader with the most voice. I mean, we hadn't talked to him since, you know, before the Chargers game. You know, Melvin Ingram played against his former team. Would have been nice to see what his reaction was.
That would have been nice. It's just too bad that he didn't have bigger impact on the game, though.
I mean, Frank Clark is one of the most boisterous and gregarious characters of this entire championship run. Could have talked to him yesterday. I mean, you know, I just think fans, you know, fans just as much as reporters want to know what's going on. And the easiest way to do that is to have players be made available.
So I didn't realize this. Melvin Ingram is not in the box score. He did not record a statistic in this game.
Correct.
Therefore, he did not do anything. That's what my... That's kind of meta. There was a bad tweet / bad story. Seth wrote about it. You can read Seth. Don't read the original one. It sucks. But you can read Seth's story if you want. It was... Seth's story was good. I was making jokes. It was... Not only did you see Melvin Ingram plenty in this game, did you hear the Najee Harris
No, I did clip? Not.
A reporter asked Najee Harris... about that 4th-and-1 toss.
Yes, that Melvin Ingram clearly knew was coming.
Let me have this, Nate.
Okay, my bad.
So somebody asked him, said, so, you know, the 4th-and-1 toss play, you know, the Chiefs had a good read on it. Melvin was one of the first guys over there. And by the way, I'll add parenthetically, it looked like the whole defense knew that bleep was coming. I don't know that I've seen this defense make a play like that at any point this year because it's... There was just a wall of red. So, you know, it looked like Melvin might have even known it was coming. Is that a play that you guys ran a lot when Melvin was here? And do you think that he knew that was coming? And Najee Harris, who is a good interview, a good press conference, seems like a good dude, went, no, I'm not going to answer that question. You can ask me another one if you want, but I'm not going to answer that question. And the reporter on Zoom, of course, had a little delay, and he went, no, I'm good. And that was... That was the answer to that question where I believe Najee Harris blinked in Morse code. Yeah, man, he knew what was coming. Big win for the hostages.
Yeah, I was just about to say. I mean, the hostages, you know, when they gotta get to work, man, do they really work.
Yeah, they were learning over there in the, I don't know what to compare to. I'm afraid I'll be too extreme.
Don't you ever, look. I know we're getting towards the end of the show.
Yeah. You can wrap us up if you want.
Don't you ever doubt Mike Tomlin, because they're still going to find a way to get a winning record. Look, he's never had a losing record with the Steelers.
They got a tie, man. And in a 17-game season, they're going to find a way to be .500.
You and I both know they ain't gonna lose these next two games. Watch. Mike Tomlin, he's a great coach, even though his team is clearly... not what it used to be, obviously, with Ben Roethlisberger, who, you know, man, it went bad real south. One of my biggest concerns about this game that we never even got to, both in the audio forum and on the field, was like, you know, it almost reminds me of Joe Montana back in the day, where it's like, ooh, Joe would start these games with the Chiefs, where it'd be like, you know, if we could just handle the first quarter... And then his body will get into a rhythm. And then, you know, his brain already has it all. So it's not like you're going to surprise him. But he just needs to get into a rhythm. And if you've watched any Steeler game over the last 2 months, it's like, oh, by about the third to early fourth quarter, guess who's like, you know, loosened up? Who's in rhythm? Yeah. Who's running a hurry-up offense to a pretty efficient manner? It was Ben Roethlisberger. But you know what? You never get to that if you're down 17-0 early in the second quarter. So, good on the Chiefs for not letting Roethlisberger even have an opportunity to play his best when it's been needed most, because that's the only reason why they're even in the playoff picture, is because their quarterback cannot play his best for 60 minutes. But at least he has been wise enough to conserve his best 20 towards the second half of most of these games.
Ben Roethlisberger plays quarterback right now like Han Solo right after he gets unfrozen from the carbonite.
Ooh.
Where, like, he's stumbling out at first. He kind of gets his feet back, but his eyes aren't quite back the whole way, and then eventually he's Han Solo again. Ben Roethlisberger is like that. He's basically defrosting for the first half.
It's a very good analogy.
Thank you.
Okay.
Is that everything? We do it? We got it? Read Nate's story at The Athletic.
Please do.
Seth's work, mnchiefsfan.substack.com. Nate's at by Nate Taylor. Seth is at real mnchiefsfan. I'm at JB Briscoe. Those are our Twitter handles. You can follow us there. We'll have another episode previewing Chiefs Bengals later this week. If you like the show, tell somebody about it.
Please.
And subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. All right. Okay. Go ahead, Nate.
It's always a joy when listeners... just share parts of their lives or why we have made some imprint on their lives.
Yes.
I'm going to shout out Phil K. Can you help me with the last name, Josh?
Oh, I don't have the tweet up. I know exactly what you're talking about. I don't have the tweet up. It's
Carter,
really cool,
Carterella? Phil Carterella. I
Philly
tried.
C, I call him. Phil C. Philly C.
I tried, Phil. But Phil Carterella.
That sounded good.
Sent us a lovely tweet on Christmas Day. And now I feel like the podcast has reached a level where I can just be thrilled that we provide something. Hopefully joy, entertainment, some insight, of course. But look, Phil's wife, who I don't know her name because he didn't put it in the tweet, but shout out to her and her.
Shout out to Phil's wife, man.
Yeah, her esteemed Christmas planning. But look, she got somebody to crochet, I guess, our 2021, would you call it mantra? Would you call it our, what would you call it, Josh?
The first thing is, I think I would call it a cross stitch. I think I am
cross
not.
Excuse me.
Okay,
oh
okay.
My goodness.
That's all right. Woo! I just wanted to verify this. Thank you, sir. This is not my area of expertise, but I think it's
neither
a cross
me
stitch, technically.
Clearly. Yes, cross stitch.
It's one of those, I don't have the picture, but it's you know, like a mounted cross stitch thing with, yes, what I would call our message of hope during,
yes,
these unprecedented times,
yes,
that were the rocky roads of the start to this season.
Yes, when your team was 3-4, we did our best, and I appreciate Phil Carterella taking it to heart that the team you root for has Patrick Mahomes, and this was cross-stitched with would be the Kansas City skyline as part of it. But just, you know, thank you, Phil, for sharing that with us. Thank you to everybody who's listened. Merry Christmas if you celebrated the holiday. Obviously, happy Kwanzaa, because we are now doing that, Josh, you know. But it's we are now in season.
The way that you framed that, I just immediately thought about the NASCAR tweet that said happy Kwanzaa.
Oh, no.
Because of the way you said, now that we're doing that, it just, that's just,
that
I don't know
in,
why that's what jumped to
yeah,
mind.
Yeah, you know.
Giggling a little bit.
It's okay. It's who we are. But yeah, I
NASCAR's trying.
Don't we all?
Keep trying.
Yeah. But look, it really is incredible. And thank you for sharing with us. And yeah, let's just end it right here. The team you root for has Patrick Mahomes, who again is as on fire as he's ever been all season.
Now Phil's wife has to add that part to the cross stitch now. Thanks, Nate. Really helpful.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.